Well, hello again, everyone. I'd like to welcome you all to, yes, another episode of On the Mark Sports Talk with your host right here, Mark with that letter C. And for those keeping track, those keeping score, this is our 163rd episode in 163 consecutive weeks. How about
Kanahara?
So how's everyone today? We always start with that.
Good. How are you, Mark?
Hey, Mark.
Okay. We're doing good here. Busy. A couple of quick announcements here. Don't forget that Michael Pollack, voice of the Long Island Ducks, will be joining us July 6th for the third time.
Without Daniel Murphy.
And yeah, we were going to talk about Daniel Murphy, but Daniel Murphy was swooped up behind from the team, and he's with the Angels now. The Angels farm system, I think, give him a couple of days to play Major League ball, and he'll be back with the team there and with the California, Los Angeles.
Yeah. They got Ruben Tejada to replace him.
Right.
All right. I have a story to tell you, and I just bear with me because I have to get this off my chest. Because I have to tell you about my wife Michelle and I going to Denver last Thursday, 1 week ago. We were there already last week. We left very early Thursday morning. And of course, that's the reason why we had last week's show on a Tuesday, right? And we get to JFK Delta Airlines Terminal 4. Some of you could relate to this. 6:50 in the morning for an 8 o'clock flight. Nonstop. Great. Nonstop. We checked in, received our boarding passes, and then we turned our bags to the people who take the bags really quickly. Everything going smoothly. Mm. Then we walked to the security line to see a huge, long, extra long line with a posting. You'll be on this line for 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. So we were online, we dug in, we had our carry-ons, and we moved at a snail pace for about 5 minutes. And then some Delta rep cut the line a few people in front of me and said, "Everybody here, follow me." So I was thinking, where are we going, right? So we followed this person.
The Pied Piper.
We followed this person. I mean, one, but it's amazing. You know, you're in a line, and then we're walking through the entire terminal, one behind the other, because that's where we started from. And he takes us down two flights of stairs. He takes us to the bowels of Delta Airlines. But then we see there's another security check down there with virtually no line. Well, we hit it lucky, right? Of course, when it was my turn to go through, I followed directions, only to learn I was pulled to be checked. Dummy me, I left my computer in my carry-on. When, of course, you gotta take it out and put it in a separate bin, whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay, they did that, all right. Few minute delay, no problem. Then we, we dealt with that, went to our gate, plane was on time, we're in the air, we fly. Good. Okay, so that was our snag going. We get to Denver, and they say your baggage is going to be on carousel B11.
I thought you had carry-on.
No, and my check-ins, too.
Oh.
Check-ins. Okay, so B11. Now, for those who know Denver Airline, it's a very long distance to the bags. You have to either walk 20 minutes or take their little shuttle train.
So you opted to walk.
So we take the train within the airport. And, of course, it's like Penn Station. People are, like, pushing. So we waited for three trains to go before we were first online. We go in, And for some reason, my wife is like delayed going in, and I'm in. I like literally, here come the doors are closing. I like grab her arm and shove her, and now she's caught in between the two doors.
That was good.
And I grab her, I shove her through, and she gets through.
Oh, God.
Okay. Packed in like sardines until our destination.
You know,
we get
Mark,
to, let me finish the story.
We, not in New York. Man, that's assault.
We get to B11, and before we got to B11, of course you got to go to the bathroom. When you're flying for 3.5 hours, you got to go pee-pee, right? So we went to the bathroom. By the time we got to B11, there's no bags on the carousel, and there's no people around the carousel waiting for the bags.
You know what? It wasn't B11.
Wait, shh. Let me tell the story. Listen, you weren't there. And lo and behold, no bag, as I said, and there were 175 people on the plane.
Right.
So where are these people?
Manifest. Manifest.
So we're waiting. Then I see a sign, because they have they list the flights, and the flight wasn't listed. So it was like my twilight zone. So I looked to B10 right next door, and B10 had our number on it, but again, no one's hanging around B10, and there's no bags on the carousel. So we waited again. Finally, smarty pants me, I go over to the Delta baggage office.
Smart.
And they said, yes, your bags are right here. Wow. So it seems by going to the bathroom and delaying getting on that train, everyone else went to the baggage, got their bags. And we were the last two, but okay, we got our bit.
But you have to your
story's not over. Story's not over.
No.
Next on to the rent-a-car. Hope you enjoyed this. To the rent-a-car. We have the budget fast break.
Yeah, I got that.
Budget fast break. You don't have to wait on the line. They take you to a certain section. Supposedly your car is waiting for you.
Right.
You beat the lines. Get the car quickly. We got a fast break. There is a little line. And I finally get my car. They say your car is right there. Very nice. Keys, of course, in there. We start driving. First of all, the car is filthy.
Right.
It's a white car. It's filthy, dirty on the outside. Right. Then we start driving to like the security check where they make sure you are legit. And the check tire pressure light is on the car. So I said to my wife, let's just take it. Just no. What if it's a slow leak in the middle of nowhere? We don't know this area. Let's get another car. So we told the lady at the gate there. I said, "All right, drive around, check your car in, tell them what's going on. They'll give you."
Why don't you just check the tires?
You know, maybe the indicator light was broken. Who knows? But you see, a check tire pressure. It's a rent a car. You're in a strange land. You want to get a new car. We got a new car. So they gave us another new car, and
and
the windshield was cracked.
Right.
It had a big ding in the middle.
Unbelievable.
The size, I don't know.
Size of a bullet hole.
And they gave it to you,
right?
Bullet
hole. So I said, "Well, take this car because it's a really fancier car than the first car we had." And I said, "Just please write that down, that it's there, right?" They have to make sure all the no dents. You know, you've done that before. So finally we meet our friends. We have lunch. We have dinner. We had a great time. Now it's 9 o'clock at night, and we wanted to get back to our hotel, which is 30 minutes from our friend's house. And just as we got in the car, it started to rain. Now, I have the GPS. It didn't rain all day, but started to rain at that point. And at first, the rain was very light. All right, we could drive through this. Then it got harder and harder and harder. And then golf-size hail was pounding down on the top of the car, a sound I've never heard before. I'm sure you've all heard hail before. I've never seen golf-size hail. You always see small hail when it does hail. But golf-size hail, banging on top of the car, visibility is like zero. Didn't want to pull over. My wife said, pull over. I'm not pulling over. So we managed to make it through, you know, bang, wow, bang, 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 bang. Of course, what happens, the hail eventually stops. It rains. And we finally got back. The 20-minute trip took an hour because we had didn't put us on the highway. It took us all side streets. Anyway, we got back to the hotel after an hour. Finally, day one was over. That's some experience for day one, huh?
Yeah.
You need another day to
rest.
Damage your car?
No. I thought maybe that those hail would pass into the windshield with that already started hole there and explode the whole thing into our face. It did.
You would have been better off, Mark, if you took a shuttle to the town that you were staying at and eventually getting a vehicle from an auto or from a car rental over there, because you also had to pay the airport tax.
Right. Yeah. So the Denver shuttle.
I didn't know that. But that was my experience. I hope you.
That's the end of budget rent a car for you.
But I have fast break. All right, Gerald. Sports highlights. Your sports highlights. Sponsored by AA batteries. And this is show 163 plus the 1846. Add that up. Gives us what year?
2009.
Talk to it.
So, good year, right, Michael?
I love that season. That was a great season. But before Jerry starts, Jerry must realize the Yankees had a lot of good seasons after that. A lot of good seasons after that. Okay,
they
Jerry.
Did. And they won a lot of championships after that season, too.
They got into the World Series. Not
like yeah, just Mets. Like the Mets.
Just like the Mets.
Oh, shush up.
Ed.
Okay, 2009 MLB season. These are what I believe to be the key facts about the 2009 MLB season. For the awards and leaders, I will name the National League player, followed by the American League player. Key awards, MVP, Albert Pujols and Joe Mauer. Rookie of the year, Chris Coughlin and Andrew Bailey. Cy Young, short-haired Tim Lincecum and Zach Greinke. Key leaders, batting average, Hanley Ramirez and Joe Mauer. Home runs, Albert Pujols. And in the American League, two co-leaders, Carlos Pena and Mark Teixeira. RBIs, Prince Fielder and Ryan Howard were co-leaders in the National League, American League, Mark Teixeira. ERA, Chris Carpenter and Zach Greinke. Some interesting highlights of the 2009 MLB season. Gary Sheffield of the New York Mets became the 25th player to join the career 500 home runs club. Two new ballparks were opened, the new Yankee Stadium and Citi Field. Randy Johnson reached the 300 career wins plateau. He became the 24th player to do it, and I think he'll probably be the last player to do it. Mariano Rivera notched the 500th career save in his career. Derek Jeter broke the all-time career hit total for a Yankee, breaking Lou Gehrig's record. Ivan Rodriguez passed Carlton Fisk for the most career games caught as a catcher with 2,228. Ichiro Suzuki collected his 2,000th hit and broke Willie Keeler's record of 8 consecutive 200 hit seasons. On July 23rd, Mark Brill tossed the 19th perfect game in MLB history. The Pittsburgh Pirates reached a new low in futility on 9-7 by clinching their 17th consecutive losing season. The Mets are working on that. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hit his 400th career home run. Here's a brief summary of the 2009 World Series, particularly for Mike. The Yankees defeated the Phillies 4-2. The Yankee games were played at the new Yankee Stadium, the inaugural year for that baseball park. ERA composite comparisons. Yankees 4.58, Phillies 5.37. Yankee batting average was 247 versus the Phillies 227. Some World Series records established. Career postseason wins, Andy Pettit, 18. Career saves in the World Series, Mariano Rivera with 11. An RBI in a single World Series, Game 6, by Matsui. The Yankees secured the World Series by winning in Game 6. Hideki Matsui was named the series MVP, making him the first Japanese-born player and the first full-time designated hitter to win the award. He only started, listen to this, he only started in three of the six games because the DH was not used in the National League ballpark. Remarkably, he batted only 13 times in the series, and he had 8 hits, including 3 home runs and 8 RBIs. His batting average was 615. Wow. I want to make one other comment about the 2009 season, which has bothered me forever. As we all know, Citibank was bailed out by the government. It was about to go bankrupt. And to reward the taxpayers, Citibank entered into a naming rights agreement with the New York Mets to pay them $20 million per year, as I recall, for 20 years. That made me extremely happy as a taxpayer. I'm glad we bailed them out. And that concludes, and that concludes my summary of the 2009 season.
Anybody want to make a comment?
By the way, what? Citibank had a 10-for-1 reverse split then.
Yes, they did. And by the way, this is worth about 9% of its all-time peak.
Okay. And Citibank had a 5-for-1 split.
10-for-1.
That was the reverse split. No, listen. That was the reverse. They also had a five-for-one split about 10 years before that.
Alan, the peak was about, I believe, if I remember.
Absolutely.
Alan, the peak was about $58 a share. Today, I think it sells for the equivalent of about $450. What's that?
That's correct.
Absolutely agree. Yeah. Right. The peak was in early 2001.
Yeah, I'm an old city banker.
He's a city banker. No, I worked with 100 of them.
It was about 48 on the close.
Right, which is $4.80. Which is really closer to $24.
You know that, just as an aside, do you know that Sandy Weill fired Jamie Dimon when he was at Citibank?
Oh, sure.
Yes. Yeah.
The dumbest move ever made.
Well, okay. He was dumbest. His protege. I met Sandy and Jamie Dimon on October 2nd, 1998, Joe. What was that date?
That was the date they took over Citi.
That's right. I was on the second floor meeting with Colin Crook.
Probably somebody political.
I think I was meeting with Colin Crook.
Colin Crook, yeah.
Right. I had to go down. You had the first and second floor elevator. And Sandy was in there. And he said, "You mind waiting?" I said, "Not an issue." And he said, "Oh, this is Jamie Dimon."
Alan, how did the merger go with Citibank?
It was terrible. It was the worst.
Yeah, it was awful. It killed him.
He took it over. Sandy Weill took it over. He didn't care. All he liked doing was making deals. And then he stepped back and he put this idiot lawyer in charge, Chuck Prince.
Chuck
Prince and Bob Rubin who decided to get into credit default swaps.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
That did him in.
All right.
Right. Because guys. Then in 2007, 2008, 2009,
yep.
Bum, 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 bum.
There was insurance without anything to back it up.
Right.
All right. Let's move on from this discussion.
Yeah,
I know.
I don't know. I
another
on
time on another
That's
channel.
My screen.
Hang on, Mark. I didn't get on the airplane yet.
Okay. Michael,
all right.
Really
quick. A couple of things. Number one, in 2009, of all things, I ended up attending the NYPD Academy, the police academy. And my first day at the academy, I'm sitting in the auditorium with all the other students, and the sergeant comes in, actually it was a lieutenant, And he walks in with a briefcase that says New York Yankees on it. And he walks up to the microphone and he says, the first thing of my lessons is at the academy, the New York Yankees are like, the NYPD are like the New York Yankees. We're designed to win. And I'll never forget that. And one question for Jerry, what washed up pitcher really snuck around in that World Series to Hall of Fame?
Martinez.
Tino Martinez, right.
Michael, were you on 20th Street Police Academy? The one on 20th Street on the east side?
Right, that's where I went.
Hey, that's where I ran that hospital across the street, Cabrini Medical Center, the dental park.
Could have gone out for dinner.
Did you become an auxiliary cop?
What's that, Jack?
Did you become an auxiliary police officer?
I am. I attend once every couple of months at the where is it? The 115th precinct in Corona. I go there, but it's for the civic leaders. We all do that,
right?
Okay. Why don't we move on? We can come back to this at 6:30 tonight. Milton's going to do his Name That Tune back to his regular spot right now.
All right. What I wanted to tell you, this group is from Bensonhurst, Brooklyn. It's one of my favorite groups of all time. They had many, many hits, but I'm going to play one of them you from 1960. Here it is.
Know the name of that song? I never heard of that song, but
it was a double-sided hit on Oticon record label. The one I just played for you was I Only Want You by Jimmy Gallagher and the Passions, but the biggest hit that they ever had was Just to Be With You. If you ever want to play it, I think Danny knows it. Play it on YouTube, one of the greatest records ever done, Just to Be With You by the Passions.
But I don't know the group.
Wow. I've never heard of it. Well, that's a typical song of the era. All the songs sound like
I got to go to the early 60s because you know the 70s too
Is it the Spinners? Doo-wop was already going out by the early 60s. It was there, but it was.
All right.
All right, Milton, you got the win. You stumped us. You got the win. All right, as far as beep beeps go, I did find a name that's an old-time player, He played in the 70s and the 80s, but that's gone back 50 years. Dave Chalk. Does that name sound
familiar? Yeah, infielder for the Angels, I think.
Angels, the Rangers, the A's, and the Royals, 1970s, 1980s. I went going through some old baseball cards, and lo and behold, Dave Chalk was right there. Okay, thank you on that. Anybody else have a beep beep? No. If you see any unusual names during the week, write them down and put them by your computer. Gold. All right, this day in sports, June 15th. I didn't realize that June 15th in sports was a very, very big day. Trading deadline many years ago. Yeah. Well, in 1887, the baseball Giants beat the Phillies 29-1. How about that? In 2002, this one, I don't know where they got this. In 1902, if you thought 29-1 was a whipping, on this day, a minor league game, Corsicana 51, Texarkana 3. I think it must be minor league baseball. A guy named Justin Clark of Corsicana. In one game, hit 8 home runs.
Whoa.
God, I don't know what league that was in. I have no idea.
This thing must have prioritized.
8 home runs. You would think after a while they either hit him or put him on the base, walk him. 1928, Phillies, Philadelphia A's, Ty Cobb steals home for a record 54th time in his career.
Lefty, you have to worry.
What's that?
Okay. We'll get to stealing home.
1931, yeah. Eddie Kyle and Harry Heilman retire from baseball. In 1938, the first night game at Ebbets Field, the Reds 6, Dodgers 0, and that was Johnny Vandermeer's second no-hitter on that night. In 1948, the first night game at Briggs Field. Remember Briggs Field in Detroit?
Briggs Stadium.
And they renamed it, I believe, Tiger Stadium. They beat it was the first night game. Tigers beat the Philadelphia A's 4-1. In 1951, on this date, Joe Louis scores his very last knockout victory.
Hmm.
Could tell you how long he's, you know, how long he's been around or how long it's been since he boxed. In 53. Yeah. Here's an interesting one. The St. Louis Browns end a 14-game losing streak by beating the Yankees and ending their 18-game winning streak. So two streaks were stopped there, losing streak and a winning streak. In 53, Yankees first baseman at the time, Johnny Mize, becomes the 93rd player to get 2,000 hits. In 57, the Yankees trade Billy Martin and Ralph Terry to Kansas City for Ryan Curran, which means the Yankees got Ralph Terry back again.
Yeah.
Pitching the World Series in what, 60?
62.
60. 60. 60. 60. 60. 60. So he went to them in 57.
Might have won MVP in 1962.
I'm not sure, but okay.
He was my hero in 1960.
Oh, in the World Series. In the World Series.
Yeah. He let him pitch the whole game against the Giants. He pitched.
Yeah.
Right.
But they got Ryan Durr.
He was my hero in 1960.
In 1960, the great horse jockey, Angel Cordero, wins his first race. 1960. He goes on to win over 7,000 races. It's been around a long time, huh?
Yeah.
In 1963, the Giants, Juan Marichal, no hits. The Houston Colt 45s won nothing. In 1965, this is Denny McClain before his 31-win season in 68, I believe. Well, in 65, he was a relief pitcher. He struck out the first 7 batters he faced. He went on to strike out 14 batters in relief in 6 2/3 innings. In 1969, on this day, as Fred said, trading deadline day, the Mets added Don Clendenin, who was a big factor in their World Series win. In 74, at the French Open, tennis, American teenager Chris Everett wins her first of 7 French Opens. Here's another big trade the Yankees made in 1976. They send Rudy May, Tippy Martinez, Dave Pagan, a pitcher, Scott McGregor, a pitcher, and Pat Dempsey. Pat Dempsey was the catcher? Pat?
Rick Dempsey.
To Baltimore for Kenny Holtzman, Doyle Alexander, Elrod Hendrick, I forgot he was on the Yankees, and Jim Freeman, who was got like a minor league.
Yeah. You remember in those days you could only trade within your own league.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, for many years.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. In 1976, there was a rainout at the Astrodome. Ow. Heavy rains made it difficult for the visiting team and umpires to get through the flood streets to the stadium. So we'll have a rainout. 1977, another trade and a sad day, probably the saddest day in Mets history, as Tom Seaver is traded to the Reds on June 15th for the package, including Pat Zachary. And also in 1983, the Mets
and Norman
Keith Hernandez. from the Cardinals for Neil Allen and Rick Ohmby. In 1984, Thomas Hearns retains the WBC light middleweight title with a second round knockout of Roberto Duran. And Roberto Duran, his first time he was ever knocked out. In 1987, Michael Spinks, who had a better career than Leon, TKO Jerry Cooney for a the ring heavyweight title. Don't know what the ring heavyweight title in a magazine.
Was Duran knocked out, or he just never got off the bench?
No, I think he was knocked out. I don't think he was knocked out. It said KO.
TKO.
No, I have KO, not TKO. But we can double check on that. Maybe they misprinted it. In 1990,
he never got off the bench.
Oh, that would be a TKO. But the paper I saw it and said KO. We can double check on that. In 92, Jeff Reardon breaks Raleigh Finger's save record. And of course, it's long. Those records have been long broken. That was only 342 at the time. Maybe they changed the system later on to get more saves. I don't know. In 2003, NBA Finals, the Spurs beat the Nets 4-2 for their second title. In 2004, the Pistons beat the Lakers in one of the biggest upsets ever in the championship, 4-1. In 2019, the jersey worn by Babe Ruth sold for $5.64 million at auction. And in 2019, NBA's Anthony Davis is traded from the Pelicans to the Lakers for Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, who's a Knick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Free agent Knick, right? And three number one picks. That's all I got for this date. Lots happened. All right, Gerald, you found something?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention something. You had talked about Briggs Stadium before. Comerica Park and Chase Field have that dirt path from the mound to home play. To me, when I watch those games, it's a pain in the neck. There's all kinds of reasons. There's an origin for it. One of the reasons given is that it's easy for the umpire to follow the flight of the ball. It's just unbelievable they have it. It goes back so many years.
Right. And also, Jerry, Briggs Stadium had one of the most impressive home runs by Reggie Jackson.
Reggie, yeah.
Uh-huh. Right.
White Tower.
The Red Star game.
And right. Ted Williams, too. Williams hit one, too.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move on. Sports Stories by Larry, sponsored by Size Medium.
Okay.
What do you have, Larry?
Not even a large.
We have two stories today. The first one, how did we get to a PGA-LIV merger? On August 4th, 2022, I broke the story to this panel that the Saudi's Sovereign Wealth Fund was used to start LIV Golf with 7 regular season tournaments throughout the U.S. and abroad, plus a championship round. And that human rights activists accused the Saudis of using sports to launder its poor humanitarian reputation. At that time, the PGA resisted LIV by suspending those who jumped ship to LIV from participating in future PGA tournaments. But this resistance triggered the Department of Justice to launch an antitrust investigation against the PGA. On January 26, 2023, I also broke the story to this panel that PGA allowed LIV players to compete in the Masters and other PGA majors if they qualified for them. Presumably, PGA thought that this concession to LIV players would convince the Department of Justice to drop its antitrust investigation. DOJ did not drop the case. But why did the PGA cave in to the LIV with LIV's Yasser Al-Rumayyan, the chair of the board of directors of the new entity, and PGA's Jay Monahan, its CEO. Part of the answer is that there were suits and countersuits between LIV and PGA, and the PGA realized it would go broke trying to keep up with the LIV. The other part of the answer is that neither the PGA nor the LIV did very well with both vying for the attention of golf fans. Note that the merger is not a done deal. It has to be approved by the Department of Justice. Craig Sebald, a partner and antitrust specialist with an international law firm, said that the Department of Justice had no problem approving the NFL-AFL merger in the 1960s and the NBA-ABA merger in the 1970s, but sports then was not considered a business. But sports today are recognized as big business, and the DOJ would treat the PGA-LIV merger case as such. Finally, the U.S. Senate is launching an investigation of the PGA-LIV deal. It could mount public pressure against the merger. That completes my take on the PGA-LIV merger.
Larry has a second story, but does anybody want to comment on this one?
Well, for what it's worth, Fowler shot a 62 today, and Shoffley looks like he'll also shoot a 62. It's the U.S. for today's the first day of the U.S. Open. They're all
LA
happy people.
So LIV is allowed to play in that tournament.
Correct.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Okay, anybody else?
Hence, happy people.
Happy people, yeah. All right, Gerald has a comment.
I just wanted to read something. Legendary golf champ Tiger Woods declined a nearly $1 billion deal to play in a controversial new tournament circuit bankrolled by Saudi Arabia, the CEO of Operation, has told the Washington Post. What a, boy, that is really great, I think.
He'll need the money.
But still, to turn that down?
Yeah. Well, he's hurt. Anyway.
He had to pay away 40% in taxes.
Maybe.
That'll leave $600 million if my math
that's
is right.
That's it. All right,
that's Larry, true, but he's worth about $800-900 million already. Maybe more.
Larry, go on to your second story, please.
My regular story for this week is entitled Standardized Dimensions of MLB Stadiums. Traditionalists do not mind that MLB stadiums have vastly different dimensions. Fenway Park is an interesting case. Constructed in 1912, it has short distances in left field, 310 feet, right field, 302 feet, and center field, 389 feet. In contrast, Coors Field has much longer distances all the way around. But in time, standardized dimensions will take hold as old stadiums are retired and new ones constructed. Here is why. The MLB rule book states that new parks constructed by professional teams after June 1st, 1958 are required to have the following dimensions.
1958.
A minimum distance of 325 feet between home plate and the nearest fence, stand, or other obstruction on the right and left field foul lines, and 400 feet between home plate and the nearest fence, stand, or other obstruction in center field. These dimensions do not apply to renovation of old stadiums. And these rules are designed to promote fair competition. However, MLB gives some leeway to teams as long as they do not build parks that egregiously violate these dimension rules. For example, San Diego's Petco Park that opened in 2004 is officially 396 feet in center field, not quite meeting the 400-foot rule. Also, Oriole Park at Camden Yards that opened in 1992 is officially 318 feet down the right field line. Again, not quite meeting the 325 feet rule. Further, when the Oakland Athletics move to Las Vegas and play in a new stadium, that stadium would be subject to these dimension rules. And finally, when the Tampa Bay Rays build a new stadium, presumably somewhere in Florida, it too would be subject to these rules. That completes my regular story for this week.
Comments, Michael.
Yeah, and if you want to go into a real Twilight Zone world, go to Fort Myers, Florida, where the Red Sox train, and they actually have a replica of Fenway Park with all the dimensions. It's like going to a Ersatz Fenway Park, and it's a lot of fun, especially if you get to see the Red Sox play the Yankees. It's a real great baseball experience. I recommend it if you could ever try doing something like that.
Yeah. Well, they're giving the minimums to build, you know, the minimum dimensions we just mentioned, right? So
they're not minimums. They're not the minimums.
All ballparks have to be standardized now.
So if new parks built after June 1, 1958 have to have these dimensions.
But that's minimum.
No, that's the these are the rules are required to have the following dimensions.
City Field and Yankee Stadium have the same dimensions?
No.
Yankee Stadium is not even close.
No, of course not.
No.
That's what I don't understand. 58.
The Yankee Stadium has the same dimensions as the old renovated stadium.
Right. So it must be minimum.
No, it's not minimum. Yeah.
I'm missing something.
they want to standardize everything, but it's like never going to happen.
Yeah,
it may happen in 100 years from now.
Remember the ballparks they were building in the early 70s? That were they call them cookie cutters.
They were all purpose.
Exactly alike, you know.
They were all purpose.
So boring. So boring.
Right. Yeah.
Pittsburgh, Cincinnati. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. All right. We can look more to that. All right. Thank you for this. Oh, Gerald.
I want to take this opportunity to give my rant about the Wilpons and City Field. When City Field was constructed, the dimensions were ridiculous. And as I recall, David Wright almost had a heart attack when he first saw the completed project. I believe that the fences at City Field have been brought in a couple of times.
Yes.
Remarkable that the Wilpons would build such a ballpark, which would impede their star player from hitting home runs. Unbelievable, but Jeff Wilpon is a genius. I rest my case.
They brought him in a few times, in a few various places. All right, let's go on to Michael's Yankees and Jets rant, sponsored by Roses.
Roses.
What do you
have?
Come on, let's go.
Or a blue lady. Well, the Jets, they're still on the threshold of winning the Super Bowl, and we shall see what's going to happen to them. I really don't have anything much new to say about the Jets, but I do have something to say about these last two Yankee games that took place at Citi Field. And if you really had any objection to the way Aaron Boone manages baseball, sit down and take a look at those last two games, okay? First of all, the Tuesday's game, all right? Severino flat out stunk, okay? He could not pitch to save himself. And there was a little bit of a plan that could have happened where Severino would be used as an opener and he'd pitch one or two innings to see how well he's pitching. And as I said, he was pitching like crap. And the Yankees brought up a 27th man, Randy Vasquez, who has been pitching lights out. He could have pitched from the second inning on, and he could have pitched like four, five, six innings. And then what Boone did instead, he left in Severino, and it turned into a hairbreadth Harry type of game with all kinds of ridiculous things happening. And then what did Boone do when he finally did take out Severino? The Yankees have right now the best bullpen in the major leagues. So what Boone did, each inning, the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, right on through, one pitcher an inning, and that's how they did it. And Holmes pitched lights out. He actually pitched a miraculous eighth inning. He came with the bases loaded, and he really saved the Yankees' bacon. And, of course, in the ninth inning, the Mets had no answer for King, and the Yankees won that game. Now, let's pivot to the second game, the Wednesday game. Gerrit Cole was pitching, and you will not see Gerrit Cole pitch better than he was pitching on Wednesday. And he was pitching just beautifully. He gave up one run after six innings, and he still had stuff in the tank. But what did Boone do? He took him out. He takes him out. But what happens for the remainder of the game? And a lot of crazy things happening, like Shields home, and Nimmo did all kinds of acrobatics in the outfield, and all kinds of crazy things. But what Boone did was, with the best relief pitchers in the major leagues, he puts in the second line relief pitchers. He puts on all these mediocre pitchers. And what happens at the end of the game? He has this Belinda, who the hell knows what his
Ramirez?
Name is? Ramirez, right? And yeah. Nimmo saves the Mets. And actually, in a way, although I'm a diehard Yankee fan, I'm sort of a little bit happy that the Mets did manage to split, because I'm a big fan of Showalter. But Boone, these last two games, was an example of what makes Yankee fans crazy, the way the guy manages those games. It is absolutely flat-out ridiculous. The game before Tuesday, the day before Tuesday, was an open date. The day today is an open date. They could have used every one of those special pitchers, high-end pitchers, to save easily the game on Wednesday. And Boone and Cole could have probably pitched into the seventh inning, and then they could have had either King at Holmes or King and Peralta, and the game would have been easy peasy. But nope, and the Mets won that game. And that's the thing that bothers me about that. And the other thing I wanted to mention, if I have some time, I strongly recommend the movie It Ain't Over, the Yogi Berra documentary. It is absolutely fantastic, and I really would love you guys to get a chance to see it. Those of you who live near me in New York, I know it's at the Manhasset Theater, but it's really interesting what happens. It's his daughter, his granddaughter, actually realized one day that they were honoring the four best players of the era, Sandy Koufax, Hank Aaron, Johnny Bench, and Willie Mays. And the granddaughter said, "Holy Toledo, how come my grandpa is not mentioned in that whole group?" And that was the thrust of doing the documentary. And it was very, very interesting, like, and all kinds of little nuances about Yogi Berra. For example, I bet nobody on the panel knew that Yogi Berra, he played the both ends of doubleheaders 117 times.
Wow.
When would you ever see something like that? That's unbelievable. Yeah. And another thing, there's a famous baseball game that took place in 1962. The Yankees beat the Detroit Tigers, I think it was 9-7 in 22 innings. The headline of Daily News said 22 skidoo. Yogi Berra went 3-10 that game, and he caught all 22 innings. And here he was, like close to 40 or 38 years old. It's a really horrific movie, and all the things that you remember. And one thing that I did notice, that it's unbelievable, all these players, they're almost unrecognizable with their age. Like Ralph Terry, he looked like 90 years old. I haven't seen Tony Kubek in ages. Tony Kubek was in the movie. And it was really, really a terrific, terrific movie. They mentioned the Don Larsen perfect game. Yogi was and Don Larsen. And then years later, David Cohn pitched a no-hitter on Yogi Berra Day. And that was in the game started with Larsen throwing to Yogi Berra and Cohn. A great relationship with Carmen, the Yogi Berra Museum, the story about Susan Waldman, where she actually cajoled Steinbrenner to come to the Yogi Berra Museum, and they finally made up after all these years when Steinbrenner fired Yogi Berra after 16 games as a manager. So I really recommend the movie, and it's something that you really, really enjoy. If you are a Yankee fan, you would love it even a couple of dimensions more. But even if you're a baseball fan, it's really, really fantastic. And I really appreciate seeing it. And that's my story, folks.
The that movie, I think,
Michael, how long is it going to be? in Manhasset.
I think it's North Shore Towers, though.
It was, but I think it plays like 4:30. It's an inconvenient time. I think in Manhasset, it's on Plandome Road. It's playing there regularly, starting at 1 o'clock.
I think North Shore Towers has it too.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it does. My son saw it there.
Yeah. How many? What was Cole's pitch count when he came out?
Say that again.
Anyone know what Cole's pitch
count? In the 90s.
In the 90s. That's what they're playing by the pitch count, but regardless what it is. And Nick Ramirez, he was the guy who came in the Boston game on Sunday that ended a big rally. So maybe he pitched well on Sunday. Maybe that's why he brought him.
Wow. It did annoy me. Let's face it. I didn't want to see him then.
Okay.
Is he a lefty, Ramirez?
Yeah, yeah.
All right,
yeah.
So that's another reason.
Milton, yeah.
Except that Nimmo is a 337 average against lefties.
Yeah.
Did anybody ever see, when McNeil went on the wrong side of second base, that they take a strike away?
Yeah.
They had a ball.
Called it a ball.
Have you seen that happen before this year? It was the first time I saw it.
And he was just straddling second. He was barely, I think David Cohn, I was watching MLB, David Cohn was saying, yeah, the call was right, but it's not for the true intent of the change was the big shift. He was actually straddling second base.
And I saw him slightly on the other side.
Yeah, they called the ball, huh?
Yeah.
Nope. And did anyone see on Sunday's game against the Red Sox, the great Gleyber Torres on the throw in from the outfield to second base? God. He watched the ball go right by him. And the guy in first takes second base. And
yeah.
You see that play?
I saw that. What
the hell is he doing? Was he glued to that spot? He couldn't move his feet. Brain freeze.
I would not be crying.
All right, let's move on because we have still a lot to talk about. I'm checking this clock. All right, Mets Moments by Joe.
Hey, all right.
Sponsored by Subway Cars. Always listen to your sponsors. Subway Cars.
That's one of my obsessions, by the way.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
It is. Thank you. I'm glad to be sponsored by them. Okay, so here's some statistics, telling statistics. The last 10 games, Atlanta won 8, lost 2. Miami won 7, lost 3. Philadelphia won 8, lost 2. And the Mets won 2 and lost 8. They are now 10 games out and sinking. So that's a pretty telling statistic right there. Another thing that's going on with them, and it was mentioned last night, is that the defense has started to fall apart. They were up in the top five or so for most of the season, and now they've had a run in the last couple of weeks that's just been absolutely abysmal. I mean, highlighted by a miss by Nimmo the other night in the first game of the two-game series that was just, inexplicable. It looks as if it's getting to them.
He lost it in the last.
Not only that it's a losing streak, I think they find it unbelievable. They can't believe that with a payroll like that and so many star players that they can be doing that badly, that everybody can be hitting less than they should be. I don't know who on the whole team is hitting better than they expected. Maybe Nimmo's living up to what he should do, but almost nobody else. So a couple of other things. In last night's game, Escobar almost didn't make it home.
Yeah.
But I couldn't believe it. By the time he gave up on the ball, and then the next thing you see, they're showing the guy at home plate. I would have thought that he was already on the way to the dugout, and he wasn't even at home plate. This is, I don't get it. It's inexplicable. And I don't understand. I mean, I know that Nimmo is being blamed for being thrown out at second, but I was listening on radio because I was coming home from the Brotherhood dinner. But I couldn't believe that, that with two out, that they wouldn't send the guy. They wouldn't send the guy from third. They would stop him at third. I know Cora stopped him, but I don't think Nimmo or anybody expected that to happen.
No. Also, it was really, really close. That replay was like
either way.
Yes, yeah, I understand that. I know he could have been safe, right. But it wasn't. Exactly. I guess what you can say, what they always say, is that there wasn't enough evidence to overturn the call by the
umpire. Well, right. They already called it, so they weren't going to change it.
Yeah.
No.
So,
Joe, is there any story when Alonso is coming back? Or?
No, I haven't heard anything.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, I read that he's improving, but there's no timetable. Judge.
Yeah.
You're getting better, but no timetable.
So Joe, yes. I want to mention something. I want to get my cleats into Epler, our general manager.
Please do.
Let's see.
You're not going to get any defense from me.
Smith has been suspended for 10 games, his spot cannot be replaced on the roster. So to compound matters further, Mr. Vogelbach is taking a mental health break and he's not on the injured list. So we're playing with 24 men on our roster versus 26. We're such a great team. We don't need 26.
You're right.
22.
Okay. One of my things I was going to ask, where in the world is Daniel Vogelbach lately?
Did you see him sitting in the dugout?
He seriously is not on the active roster at the moment?
No,
I didn't even know that.
No, he's on the roster.
He's on the roster. He's not on the injured list. He's taking what they call a mental break.
I think
he must have done something or said something to tick Showalter off.
No, I don't know. I think Showalter is hearing steps. I think the first thing that may happen if it does is that the hitting coach is going to get fired.
That could be.
That's the first thing that will happen.
Yeah.
I guess one of the only good things is that they put Vientos in the lineup last night. They let him play first. I was listening.
I'm going to leave now. It's 5:00.
Good night.
Bye, Fred.
Sorry.
Bye.
I'll see you later. Fred, I hope to see you later.
I was watching this blog the other night. I forget the guy's name. He was talking about, said that apparently Buck Showalter doesn't like Vientos because he's not playing him. They brought him up, but he's not being used. But he played first last night, so let's see what happens. And the final thing that I'm going to say, although I had a few more things, but it's getting late early around here. Thank you, Yogi. Is that pretty soon, I think the Mets are going to have to make a decision on whether they're going to buy or sell at the deadline. I don't think they're going to stand pat. And I think the way things are going, they're probably going to sell. And I think the two or three players that they probably should sell, they might get some value for are Hannah, Marte, and Pham. Yeah. I seriously think they should entertain selling those guys if they don't think they can make it this year. And really play the rookies for the rest of the year and see
who's the first name you said?
Connor.
Connor.
Think it's been pronounced both ways, but I think Connor.
Okay.
He pronounces it differently.
Yeah. So that's the end of my.
You're not going to get much for them anyway.
But you might get something if a team feels that it might be able to make a move.
And what would the Mets want to get in return?
I don't know. I think it's addition. I think it's addition by subtraction at this point.
Yeah.
I don't think these guys are not the future. I think Pham's playing very well at the moment, but he's not the future.
No. Pham had the first RBI last night.
Yeah.
That is correct. Yeah.
Roger, you got a comment?
At least, Joe, one little bit of positivity. At least Verlander looked good last night.
Yeah, he did. He did. But the only problem is, and they mentioned on the radio last night after they took him out at the six, is that he threw 23 pitches in the first inning, and he was up over 100 pitches.
Right.
I think he threw 107 pitches in six innings, and
it's enough.
So they took him out.
He's done well. I mean, historically, he's done well against the Yankees.
He's not pitching badly, but if you put your – if you put everything on a 40-year-old pitcher, you're taking a big chance.
Absolutely.
Scherzer, I don't know about. I will say one thing, that on the post-game show with Jerry Blevins and
Gary Apple
and Todd Zeal. Blevins said, Blevins said to him, says, I was just a journeyman pitcher and I don't want to criticize a future Hall of Famer, but if his slider wasn't working, he's got three or four other pitches. Why use the slider? Ooh. So I'll leave it at that.
Good point.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Joe. Yeah, story. Howie's West Coast Report is up next. sponsored by baby aspirin.
Okay. Well, to follow up what Joe just said about the Mets not having poor defense and pitching, I heard last night they were giving up 5.5 runs a game. It's one of the worst pitchers in baseball. Earlier this year, the Giants, who have a very strong pitching starting and reliever, the other night they came in and the relievers limited the Cardinals to 2 hits over 7 innings, and they came from behind. That was big. But early this year, the pitching, either the starters were bad or relievers, and then the defense, which was supposed to be strong, wasn't. And so everybody was getting really pissed off. Anyway, they were hit by injuries. Conforto and Haniger were both injured. Jock Peterson. And what they were forced to do was to start bringing up the rookies, starting with Casey Schmidt, who's a future shortstop of the Giants. Patrick Bailey, who was a switch-hitting catcher. And now, with Haniger getting injured again, they just brought up this guy, the number four prospect, Luis Matos. And what the Giants are doing is, early in the year, you look at their lineup, like you would look at the Yankee lineup and say, this looks like a triple-A ball club. Who are these guys? Now, you look at the lineup, and it makes sense. Estrada, former Yankee, thank you. J.D. Davis, right? Estrada might be the All-Star year. J.D. Davis may be on the All-Star team. I mean, everything has come together for them now. They're now 2 games ahead. They're at the third wildcard spot in the National League, 2 games ahead of the Brewers. So, you know, hearing that about the Mets, again, we were seeing that with the Giants. Now, what will they do now that they're 4 games over 500? I think they're going to be buyers. And I'm wondering who they'll go after. They've mentioned that the Cardinals, who are playing terrible, may be willing to give up Paul Goldschmidt. The Giants are pretty good at first with Lamont Wade, very good leadoff hitter. So I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe they'll make a deal with the Mets. I don't know. But I'm very happy about that. Now, it's happy to watch them. By the way, for many years, since 2000, when they opened up the stadium, the Giants sold out the ballpark every year to about 2018 and 19, when they really started getting bad, the team got old. And now you can get tickets. You go on their website to get tickets, and it used to be a premium price. It's not. It's much lower than it was before. You can literally go and get tickets for the game. It may change, but I think the pandemic was part of that too. Anyway, enough about the Giants. The A's got the go-ahead from the Nevada legislature to move, and also they have to wait if Major League ownership will do it. It's $380 million. Oops, excuse me. I'm sorry. $380 million in public assistance. But the A's have to raise the rest of the money. It's a $1.2 million project, billion-dollar project. They'll have to raise the money. But the thing that they're not telling is that this $380 million funding bill is not specific to the A's. So basically, Vegas is saying, well, we'll pay this money to a team, and it could be a new team moving. I'm sorry, I'm losing myself here. It could be an expansion team, so it's not particular to the A's. And the A's fans had a reverse boycott Tuesday night, where they showed up and
28,000.
Over 27,759 for a team that gets an attendance of less than 10,000 a game. So, but they're going to move. they're going to move. And it's just a shame about it. But that's basically it. That's about all I have.
The hottest team in baseball, right? Until they lost.
They are the hottest. That's the other thing I want to say. They're the hottest team in baseball. But I think them and Kansas City, one has lost more than the other, and one has won more. Literally, it's the Royals and the A's for
very nice.
Who will break the Mets' losing record? It's kind of like Maris and Mantle breaking.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Anyone have a comment?
Yeah, Howie, can I ask you a question? Is Gabe Kapler's job secure?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. After they won 107 games 2 years ago, they didn't do anything in that offseason. They were supposed to go after Trevor Story. They then, thank God, I think he's injured. Was he on the Red Sox? He's injured.
Yeah, he's injured.
Coming back.
They just, you know, everybody had career years, and then last year they were 81-81, and there was a lot of grout, but, you know, fans complaining on sports radio. But he's secure now. That team is really playing. And the thing about it, you were mentioning Aaron Boone. Kapler will use that pitching staff, will use everybody on the team. And I have one. Actually, I have one comment about the Yankees. First of all, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, most valuable player in the major leagues. This guy can do anything. And he brought back the excitement of Ricky Henderson's steal bases. But the one thing I don't understand about the Yankees, and I guess Michael's gone, is they don't run at all. You got Volpe now, you got Torres, you got who's the other one? Kiner-Falefa. Why aren't they running?
They're not getting on base. They don't get on base.
Well, that's a good question. That's a good answer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They don't use running at all.
The other thing is the Yankee analytics don't think it's worth stealing.
Mm.
They don't see the value in it.
I don't know, beginning the season started, remember how many times Volpe was running? Every time he got on base, he ran.
Yeah, because he was walking.
Went away from that.
He stopped taking walks, Volpe.
Yeah. All right, Gerald?
Joe, I wanted to ask you a question. We know that Scherzer last year earned $43.3 million. This year, the same. If he exercises his option to play next year, is he going to earn that same $43.3 million?
Yes,
I think so.
Anybody?
I don't know for sure, but I think it is.
Anyone know if he'll turn down that team his option?
There he is, master of rhetorical questions.
They could try and buy him out.
That's true.
That's possible.
But trade him to a team and pay, you know, a lot of the salary. I don't know. I have a question. If a team, say, for instance, they don't want Scherzer has $43 million on the books for next year. If the Mets were somehow to find some sucker to take him, would that come off? If they were paying $25 million of it, would $25 million of it still be on the payroll or not? I mean, I don't know how it works.
If he's sent to another team,
yeah,
on a trade.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, if they're willing
to trade him.
You say, listen, I'll pay $40 million out of the $43 million just to get him off the team.
Oh.
They could do that. Then he could be traded. Yeah. They can't trade him at $43 million, but they could theoretically work something out. But would that money come off in that case? I don't know.
Sure, you're still getting his deferred payments from the Nationals.
Got a good agent.
Look, he was a great. He was a lights out pitcher. He was an incredible pitcher. Right? I'm not saying anything.
Until he had fed on the
you know, at some point, everybody.
I want to thank you, Howie, for that story. I want to move because Roger says he may be bailing soon. I want to go to football. Jump over the basketball and the hockey for a second.
When do we talk golf?
And there was a big death. in football the other day, and then Roger's going to talk about him. Roger?
Yes, thank you, Mark. Appreciate it for fitting me in. Most of you guys probably saw Homer Jones. I think, Mark, I think I had a football card of him because he retired around 1970. So I think I had a football card. I don't know if I ever saw him play. I was more of the Fran Tarkenton, Bob Tucker, Pete Gogolak kind of generation a little bit. But anyway, I mean, I remember seeing some highlights. Two-time Pro Bowl wide receiver. He just passed yesterday at the age of 82. His last season, he actually played for the Browns. Supposedly, I don't know if this is true. Maybe you guys know. He was the first player to spike a football in the end zone. Is that true?
I never heard
that's what they say. That's what they say, yeah.
Giving him credit for, supposedly. It's kind of funny. Let's see. The Houston Oilers apparently selected him in the fifth round of the 1963 AFL draft, but he never played for them. The Giants selected him in the 20th round of the 63 NFL draft. Made his first appearance with them in 64. Two-time Pro Bowler, like I mentioned. Led the NFL in touchdown catches with 13 in 1967. And right then he had one season with the Browns before he retired. Finished career with 224 catches, 4,986 yards, and 36 touchdowns.
100-yard dash in 9.3 seconds.
Right. Very fast, very strong. And I think he wore number 45, I believe. Nowadays, the statistics don't seem so, awe-inspiring. But back then, that was impressive, I guess.
He was a burner.
Yeah.
Homer Jones, yeah.
I remember around that time, who was the quarterback in those days?
Fran Tarkenton.
Tarkenton, okay. Maybe you're right. So I remember listening on radio of the games back then, and towards the end of the first half, the Giants would put a couple of their really, really fast defensive backs or safeties in as offensive receivers, along with Homer Jones, and to get points, to get touchdowns, whatever, late in the first half, Homer Jones and like the fast Erich Bonds they had back in those days, and they had a couple other fast defensive backs. I remember them doing that because he would quickly get behind the receivers. He was so fast, so fast. Was Homer his real name? I don't even know that.
Yeah.
Born Homer? Well, name the baby Homer?
He likes staying at home, Mark.
Just think better. Yeah, Gerald?
Homer Jones, Roger, was the first player to spike a football after TD. I got it on my phone here.
Yeah. But yeah, we remember him. Us old folks remember.
Yeah, I remember.
Danny, you have no idea who we're talking about, right? You weren't around.
I do follow the names.
Yeah. Homer Jones. All right. Thank you for that one, and we'll see you when I talk to you. I can't even call you later. Okay. All right. Fred's not here. Fred had to leave also. So really quick, we had the NBA championship game this week, and congrats to the Nuggets. And remember, I was in Denver, and I left Sunday, and they won the championship on Monday, I believe, right?
Thank God you left.
I was telling my friends, by the way, the whole town, Sunday, signs up all over the town, go Nuggets, go Nuggets. I never seen billboards. The governor of the state was coming on and talk. Oh, on that shuttle train. Going from the airport to the baggage, he came on. This is Governor. I don't even know his name. Go Nuggets! It was all over, and congrats to them. I bet anyone on the screen here, when the season began, the Denver Nuggets was not one of your final teams. I'd be very surprised.
It's a coincidental tale of two sports. So you have a West Coast NBA team beats the 8-seed Miami Heat 4-1. And it was the first championship for Denver. Then you had the West Coast NHL team beats the 8-seed Florida Panthers 4-1. First championship for Las Vegas.
How about that? And two Florida teams.
Couldn't happen to a better state these days.
Couldn't happen to a better state.
Are you thinking about the NHL with the Golden Knights? 5 years, right? My wife and I were in Las Vegas in 2018 when they were in the inaugural season in the playoffs. You could not buy a T-shirt of that team in May of 2018 when we were out there. It's absolutely amazing. And I tell you, if the Oakland A's should move to Vegas, Vegas doesn't want to have a losing team. They'll be up. I'm telling you, this is they're not going to do this to put a shit-ass team in Las Vegas.
Ah, you see what happens. You know, they have young players. Remember, the young players mature and do really well.
But it shows you why is it that a team, a brand new expansion team, like in the NHL, in 5 years they win the championships, and we have local teams over here with number one market in the country, and we can't put the Rangers or the Islanders in a championship mode.
Howie, you want to comment on that?
Well, to Danny's point, it was mentioned, I think Bryce Harper, who was originally from Vegas, was actually saying this, that with the A's moving to Vegas, you're going to have about 30% of the fans who will root for the other team, whether it be Arizona, the Dodgers, the Padres, all these. Because Vegas is a vacation spot for these fans. And so there won't be that much, you know, even the Raiders were complaining about it. The fans weren't rooting for the home team. And the thing about the A's, though, the A's have gutted their farm system. There's nothing there. And they've traded away all the players. So it will take years, unless ownership changes or they don't use the A's, it would take years for them to have a winning team. And that's thanks to the owner.
All depends how much money goes behind him.
Yeah. But right now he's just has gutted the team completely, and it's a shame. It's a real shame.
I bet none of you people other than Howie can name three Oakland A's.
I can't name three Oakland A's. Swear to God, why don't watch them?
I can name
ex-Oakland A's like Starling Marte, Marcana.
You know. Gone. So Jokic, the MVP, becomes the first player in NBA
Olsen, all gone.
to lead in points 600, rebounds 269, assists 190 in the playoffs. First one to in history ever.
Where's he from originally?
He's from Serbia.
Serbia. He and Djokovic.
Yeah, Joe. And he's the most unrecognizable, other than his height, MVP. He was MVP 21 and 22.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. If you go on the street and ask, no one would know that. All right, but congratulations to the Vegas Golden Knights, not the Las Vegas Golden Knights, the Vegas Golden Knights. Get it right. And I think that team, they said they were built as an expansion team to succeed very, very quickly.
Right.
I don't know what that means, but they were. They got to the finals, and they lost the first time. Yeah, they win a couple of years later. How about the Rangers' new hire, their coach?
Retread,
Lavalette, is that how you say it?
Peter
Lavalette.
Retread.
Well, let's see. He was a Caps, and who else was he?
Islanders.
He won the Stanley Cup with the with the Carolina Panthers.
Oh, did he? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, the Panthers never won a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, they did.
I don't know. I don't think.
Yeah,
so.
He won one with them.
I don't think that. Okay, he was three seasons with the Caps.
All right, we got to look it up.
Yeah, look it up. And he was a Cap, agreed to part ways, especially since the Caps missed the playoffs for the first time since 2013-2014. And the Suns are expected to waive Chris Paul and saving $15 million on the cap on that. Well, congrats to those two teams for winning, and now –
I'm at the Hurricanes. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the Panthers never won, Joe.
No, Hurricanes. Hurricanes.
Yeah. So, in going back to baseball, you know, we'll touch baseball a little bit, watching the time here. And the Mets are in fourth place, as we said, 10 games back, four games below 500. Yankees are nine games above. Tampa Bay, you know, I was all set to write down Tampa Bay is the first team in baseball to win 40 games, but the way the A's beat them, was it 3 out of 4 or was it 2 out of 3? 3 out of 4, wasn't it? They're still stuck at, I think, no, first game to win 50. The Braves are close to 50 wins, but they're one behind right now. Alonso, we said Judge. You know, they're getting better, but no date has been decided upon when they're going to start their rehab. So we still have to go without them for a while. Look at the Pirates. Andrew McCutchen got his 2,000th hit.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. The Mets picked up Luke Voit.
Yeah.
To fill the void of Pete Alonso. But he's in the minor leagues. He's working his way back. Maybe we'll hear this weekend that they'll bring him up. If I say to you, who's the most senior New York Met right now? Your answer would be?
Verlander.
Joe Walter.
No, Mets tenure. Mets.
Nimmo.
Oh,
Nimmo, yeah.
It was DeGrom, but now it's Nimmo. How about that?
Hey, Mark.
Yeah, go ahead.
Tampa Bay's 49-22.
They're 49, so they'll be the first team to win 50, and I thought it would be a sure thing when they were approaching the series with Oakland, but they didn't. Only won one of those games. What else do we have? How about Saturday, when John Sterling in the booth got banged the foul ball?
Ow.
Ouch. Ow, 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 ow. It really hit me. I didn't know it was coming back that far.
God, he's 84 years old. Give him a break.
And he had a little, and he kept on announcing and telling the play by play. I thought that was really cool.
Butterfly on his eye.
You know? And next day he had a little bandage over his on his forehead there. I thought that was good. What else happened in baseball? DeGrom gonna have the Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
Talked a little bit at him last week. He was seen crying to the press when he announced that. And the Toronto Blue Jays, I don't know if they've recalled him since, but their top pitcher last year, Alex Manoa, was sent to rookie ball.
Yeah.
Not even AAA or AA. They sent him back to like the first kids that come up to the team in rookies. That's where they put him, all the way back. And have you followed the progress of Ellie De La Cruz?
Mm.
Anyone follow him? He was the top rookie sensation in the minors, number one prospect. The Reds brought him up last week. He promptly got a hit in his first game, and next day hit a bomb of like 460 some odd feet in Cincinnati. I follow him every day. He's come back to earth a little bit.
Yeah.
He's a third baseman. Ellie De La Cruz. I think his baseball card could be worth a lot of money. I tried looking for it. I don't have it. But that was cool. And Shane McClanahan, the first 10-game winner in baseball.
Yeah.
I think it's a nice story. Surprises in baseball. Texas in first place. Big lead. Surprise.
Without Pittsburgh.
Are they still in first place? Check that. Arizona. First place. Yes. Are these surprises in baseball?
Yeah, Pittsburgh. Well, Pittsburgh is 34-32 in the National League Central Division.
And what's the but the Brewers were second, weren't they?
The Brewers are a game behind. Cincinnati's only a game and a half behind, and the Cubs are only 4.5 behind.
And surprise, who's in last?
The Cardinals. They,
surprise? Yeah, that's the best surprise in baseball?
That's a big surprise.
Yeah. Have you heard? Padres? Huh?
You guys, Mets fans are complaining about how much money you spend. Well, look at the Padres. They're 34.
Right, right.
The Rangers spent all that talent.
The Rangers are in first place.
Yeah, that yes. was. Have you heard this one? Bo Jackson, the former two-way player, Royals, Raiders, 60 years old. He needs medical procedure to cure year-long nuisance of hiccups. Have you heard this?
Yeah, I think I heard hiccups.
He's finally got a medical procedure.
Oh, God.
Very interesting. I always loved Bo Jackson for some reason. I really liked him. I liked him as a baseball. I wasn't a Royal Raider fan. I wasn't even a Royal fan, but since baseball, we saw more often. I
was the first player to crack a baseball bat over his life.
Yeah. Go ahead, Joe.
I saw Bo Jackson make a throw from the outfield fence to home plate on a fly without any running start. Stationary. I never saw a guy throw a ball like that.
Yeah, truly a marvelous athlete. Yeah. College softball. University of Oklahoma wins its third straight national championship, beating Florida State and their 53rd consecutive game. Numbers. It's the first three-peat since UCLA in 1990. Their last loss when they won the championship last week was 109 days ago. February 19th was their last loss. During the season, they had 35 shutouts, never trailed by more than three runs. They had four batters hit over 400. Three pitchers had a sub-1 ERA, and it was their seventh NCAA championship in softball. Only Arizona with 8 and UCLA with 12 have more. How about that? The Saquon Barkley story? I don't know how it's going to end. Yeah. He's ready to sit out unless they still do. They still can negotiate and give him a contract, right?
I think till the end of about July 26th, they can negotiate.
I don't know what's going to happen. He says he wants to be a Giant for life, but they all say that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was up in Boston this weekend talking to the Patriots.
Oh, my. Yeah, that would be cool. Interesting. We'll see what happens with him. And how about the curse? Josh Allen will be featured on the cover of Madden NFL 24.
Oh, that's it. It's finished.
Of being on the cover, right?
Finished. It's a kind of horror.
Anybody watch the Belmont Stakes? I missed it. I was away. I missed it. Anybody see Arcangelo beat Forte? Yeah. Anybody? You watched it? All right.
Yeah.
Good race.
Who was last year's winner? Anyone remember?
No.
A fan to forget?
Oh, no, don't care.
Oh, Donegal, something like that. Congrats to Novak Djokovic for winning the French Open and getting his 23rd Grand Slam title.
God.
Is he the greatest of all time?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
By his winning 23, yeah. 10 Australian Opens, 7 Wimbledons, 3 French Opens, and 3 U.S. Opens. And congrats, and on the women's side, I can't pronounce the name, Inga Swiatek? Swiatek?
Yeah, Swiatek.
Swiatek.
Not Wyatt. From Poland, she beat Karolina Muchova from Czechia?
Czech Republic.
Yeah, and that's her third French Open in 4 years. She's truly number one. We heard the golf story. It's a death in track and field. Remember Jim Hines?
Yeah.
76 years old, 1968 Olympic champion from the Mexico Olympics. And the 100 meters, a world record, 9.95 in 1968. God knows what the record is now. I think Usain Bolt holds the record in that right now. He went on to play pro football with his speed, like a Bob Hayes type of thing. And he played with Miami and Kansas City. He had 2 catches and 23 yards with the Dolphins and 1 kick return for 22 yards. But since he left football, he's worked in Houston with the city youths and which is pretty cool. He's in the National Track and Field Hall of Fame. So sorry to see him go. Jim Hines.
Mark.
Bowling. Danny, you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Can you tell them about that bowling alley that's going to be leaving us?
Well, I just heard about it like a few days ago.
But you know as much as me. Go ahead.
You know, I mean, you know, I remember I may have bowled it a couple of times.
Tell us which one we're talking about.
Which one? You're not talking about Harold Lane, right?
No. The one in Flushing.
The one in Flushing. That's
Whitestone Lanes.
Whitestone Lanes. Yeah. Yeah. Years ago, I used to bowl in tournaments over there.
Remember the Whitestone Lanes, Howie?
Yeah.
They're demolishing it.
That's what they claim.
They demolish.
It's a big controversy because the people that bought the land. They want to throw down the building and put in a 9-story apartment building. But apparently that's not an acceptable code. Don't you think that people that buy a piece of property like that, they should know ahead of time what the codes are and what they want to put up?
Yeah,
that'd be nice. No.
It's a shame.
Be nice, be nice.
Yeah. And how about the drive-in movie?
No, but this is a bowling alley. As a kid, Howie, we went, right?
Yeah. Was that near Adventures Inn?
Ventures in, right? We used to take the bus and go to the bowling alley. I don't know why we went in the bowling alley. Then we walked out
to the street there also.
To Ventures in. We didn't bowl there. Ventures in, and we would go and get the sauerkraut, the free sauerkraut.
Yeah. The interesting thing is that what's really taking over bowling in the United States is really the Bolero organization, which is really their own bowling alleys nationwide. And those are the ones that it's going to be controlling the game,
in my
opinion, because they are the ones that sponsor and have all the PBA tournaments in them.
Yeah. But I thought it was unique because especially us here in the Queens, Nassau area, that we remember Whitestone Lanes. And that's
I bowled for 25 plus years at Garden City Bowl. And then it was taken over by a company that didn't care about bowling, but now it's been owned by Bolero. And I'm probably going to go back over there.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I saw camps today going into Harrow Lanes. I drove by, I saw camps going in. All right, let's move on.
I have a mechanic.
Huh?
It's really quick. You know, I bowl there on Friday afternoons.
Yeah.
And it's a Monday and Friday senior bowling in the afternoons.
Yeah.
And it was canceled on Monday because the new ownership doesn't have a mechanic. So I was talking to one of the guys that I bowled with yesterday. He says, yeah, he went there to bowl in the little tournament that we have on Monday. Mm-hmm. He was bowling on lane one and two. Lane two broke down. He didn't have a mechanic to put him on three and four. Lane four broke down and decided to cancel the whole event in the morning. And after further notice, there's no bowling. They don't have a mechanic. How can you own a place and don't have a mechanic on staff?
I don't know. Take up golf. All right, let's have one more death, and I'm sure everyone remembers this person from the WWF, the Iron Sheik.
Yes.
Died at the age of 81.
Yeah.
He's in the WWE Hall of Fame. He was inducted by his friend, Sergeant Slaughter.
Yeah.
He beat Bob Backlund for the title in Madison Square Garden back in the 60s, I believe, when Arnold Skolin, Bob Backlund's manager, threw the towel. He lost the title to Hulk Hogan 1 month later, and that launched Hulkamania began when Hulk beat the Iron Sheik. He did live in Iran, and his big move was called the Camel Clutch, in which he would like have this opponent who's like prone on the mat, and he would then basically go on top of him and pull him back.
Interesting that he was brought
camel
up
in clutch.
Camel clutch. Jim in Iran.
May he rest in peace, the Iron Sheik. All right, let's do trivia for about 10 minutes or so and then call it a day. Anybody have questions? I see some of our main question people are not with us.
Yeah.
All right, let's go with Steve.
Who holds the record for the most interceptions in the NFL in one season?
Night Train Lane? No.
Yes.
Paul Krause?
No, Night Train Lane.
Oh, I thought it was Paul Krause.
Wow. Lane,
yeah. Train Lane, 14.
Okay. Look at Paul Krause, how many he had. May tie them. All right, Gerald?
These two major league players hit their 300th career home runs in back-to-back plate appearances in the same game as members of the White Sox.
300 home runs?
Who is that?
Minnie Minoso?
No.
No.
Cash?
Pazuski?
No.
How about
that's happened?
Paul, what's his name?
With a K, I think. What?
Paul Kalenko?
Yeah, Kalenko. Who's the other one?
Tomei?
No.
Frank Thomas?
No. All right, who's the other one?
What do you know?
Jermaine Dye? Yeah. I wouldn't think he even hit 300. Oh. He hit 300 home runs? Wow. Okay.
I had 300.
How about this one? This is like, you got to go back. I'll just cross the names off. Name eight men who played 2,000 or more games for the Tigers in ever.
Alan Trammell.
Trammell is one.
Lou Whitaker.
Al Kaline.
Ty Cobb.
Bill Freehan.
Not listed.
No.
Hank Greenberg.
Not listed.
Jim Northrup.
No Jim Northrup. One name I just mentioned a few minutes
ago
with the Tigers. I mentioned the Tiger. Norm Cash.
Oh, yeah.
There are three more. One was a second baseman. Initials C.G.
Charlie Gehringer.
Hall of Fame.
And one was a guy who I think he's famous for triples. Old time. We never seen him play. Initials S.C. First name Sam.
Sam Crawford
was a Tiger, yeah. And the last one is still playing for the Tigers.
Oh, Cabrera.
Miguel Cabrera. Good. Get him.
He just hit his first home run of the season yesterday.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Slowing down. The boy's slowing down.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Who else? Questions? All right, Gerald.
In the 1960s, what MLB pitcher had the most victories?
60s.
Juan Marichal?
Yes, 191. Very good.
This is the 60s?
Okay. The year was 1960s, right. I have one more that Mike Finer would get in a second.
What's that?
Player who passed Luis Aparicio for most career hits by a shortstop.
Derek Jeter, right?
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
I have an interesting fact here. John Smoltz, Tom Glavine, Greg Maddux, and Pedro Martinez combined have struck out over 12,000 hitters in their career. They faced Tony Gwynn 330 combined times. Struck him out three times.
Wow.
I don't know who had the strikeout, who did it, but three times.
Wow. How
great Mr. Gwynn was.
What a great player.
Great player.
Great.
More questions. A few more minutes.
I shot my wad, Mark.
Huh?
I shot my wad. I got
more here. Let's see. Here's a good one. If you remember the New England Patriots. Can you name the top 10 players with the most touchdowns caught from Tom Brady?
Julian Edelman is one.
Edelman is number two on the list with 41.
Gronkowski,
105. So 105, next one is 41.
Now Danny.
Who else you got?
Danny
Amendola.
Jamie Evans is not on the list.
Wow.
No. Number three was with 40, initials RM.
Randy Moss.
Randy Moss.
Ah.
Number four, WW. 38. Wes Welker.
Oh.
Number five is ME. 38. I think he's
Mike
still
Evans.
Mike Evans.
Evans.
Number six, 28. I just helped you. Dion Branch. 27, James White. Number eight is the guy, the murderer, Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah.
Ben Watson had 20 also, and David Givens had 19. Anybody else? Look at the. I got another question. Coors Field is the highest altitude ballpark in the major league at 5,200 feet above sea level. What's number two?
Wow.
The one in Minnesota.
No. This one is 1,000 in Arizona at Phoenix. Chase Park, 1,100 feet above sea level. How about that?
Mm.
Well, it's in the middle of the desert.
All right, guys, you want to go eat?
Yeah, I'm hungry.
All right, thanks for joining us this week. We'll see you all. Oh, next week? What are we doing next week? Are we doing a regular day? Yeah, we're doing a regular day next week, right? We're doing it Thursday next week. Well, all these changes from Thursday. See you next Thursday, guys. Have a great week. Enjoy the weather, outside things, and all
have
that.
A good
stuff.
Week.
Hey, thanks, Mark.
Yes, sir. One last
I made it home in about an hour and 10 minutes last night.
Okay.
Good. It was a good time. Thank you.
Good. We'll talk again, okay?
Yep.
Take good night, care, everybody. Take
bye,
care.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Take care, Jeff.
Jerry.